From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. It could have worked as an idea, filmmaker Brian Fogel's concept for a documentary. When he started shooting, his film was about how athletes who dope, like Lance Armstrong, how they get away with it. Fogel was using himself as a guinea pig. He would try and cheat in a cycling race. But the story turns as soon as he meets a Russian chemist named Grigory Rodchenkov. Rodchenkov was going to help Fogel cheat, but he also happened to oversee drug testing for all Russian athletes. And over the course of the next few intense months, the film transforms from a gimmick into a geopolitical exposé that uncovers one of the biggest scandals in sports history: the long-term state-sponsored system of Russian doping. We're screening the film this week, talking about it with Brian Fogel today. It's called Icarus. Join us after the news.
Support for this Radio West podcast comes from Salt Lake County Animal Services, a no-kill municipal shelter specializing in pet adoptions, licensing, humane education, and more. Located at 511 West, 3900 South in Salt Lake City. More information is at AdoptUtahPets.com.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Here's how serious it got for Brian Fogel as he was making his documentary film Icarus. The story begins to unravel, and his main character, a quirky, brilliant Russian chemist named Grigory Rodchenkov, had to go into a witness protection program. His life was in danger. Rodchenkov was in charge of drug testing for Russian athletes, and as his relationship with Fogel blossoms and his career with the Russian government deteriorates, he revealed the details of a sweeping state-sponsored doping program, a program that reached back decades. Rodchenkov told Fogel and eventually reporters at the New York Times that he had been ordered by Russian sports ministry officials to cover up drug use by Russian athletes at various sporting events, including the 2014 Winter Olympics in Sochi. The case has exploded. The Russian government has issued an order for Rodchenkov's arrest, but the director, Brian Fogel, did not set out to uncover an international doping scandal. At first, he just wanted to figure out how some athletes, cyclists in particular, how they cheat, how they never get caught. Today in the program, we're talking with Fogel about his film. It's called Icarus. It premiered at this year's Sundance Film Festival. We're going to be screening it on Wednesday night. Fogel directed, co-wrote, and co-produced the film. He joined us from the studios of NPR West in Culver City, California. I've heard you talk about how you had this experience with a film that hadn't gone exactly as you had hoped. And so you felt kind of depressed. And it seems like writing, even though you've had this lifelong obsession with writing, writing was the thing that kind of helped you out of it. And I wanted to start there. That is your what cycling, what writing does for you, how you describe that relationship with cycling.
Nobody's asked me this, and so this is a fantastic question, because cycling for me has been my lifelong therapy. I think it's the kind of a combination of the endorphin rush and being outdoors and being in nature, and there's just something for me that just feels so in touch with your body, and I can essentially hear my heart beating, and it's been essentially my lifelong passion and therapy. I started when I was 13 years old. I was in a terrible crash when I was 19, and that crash kind of thwarted my desire to be a professional cyclist. But post that crash, especially as I got into my kind of mid-20s, I really, really rediscovered cycling. And it's continued to be my go-to, my therapy. I live out in Malibu, and I live in Malibu not because of the beach. I live in Malibu so I can get on my bike and ride in the mountains out here. And I grew up in Colorado, so you know, it's just where I thrive. And I was kind of going through, I guess, a midlife crisis. I was about to be 40. And I had directed a feature film about a year prior that didn't turn out the way that I had hoped to on a career level. And I was struggling to redefine myself and figure out what my next move in life was going to be. And during that period of time, I found myself riding and riding and cycling more and more as I was kind of in this, I guess, funk of trying to get things going for myself again. And whenever I got on that bike, it would immediately make me feel better.
It's funny because the film shifts gears so sort of drastically, but initially you're getting a sense that you, Brian, on some level, while you're digging into this question of how it is people manage to cheat, you're also confronting your own mortality, like your own limits. And it seems like that was a hard lesson to learn in some ways in this film.
Yeah, there was many elements of to why I really wanted to set out to make this film and to start on this journey. And there was the element of the Armstrong of it and the anti-doping of it, which was they never caught him. Yeah. To this day, he's passed 500 anti-doping controls clean.
Yeah.
And the only way they finally get him is through his confession, which was based on all of his teammates ratting him out in exchange for their own immunity. So there was that part of setting out on the journey, which was, to me, clearly the anti-doping system in sport, not just cycling, but all of sport, was not working if you couldn't catch the most tested athlete on planet Earth. And then there was the personal curiosity of myself, a lifelong athlete, but an amateur, and riding seriously, but not racing, and wondering through all these years of reading about doping scandals, and I took HGH, I took erythropoietin, you know, you hear all these different athletes either, you know, confess in retrospect or get caught, or the Armstrong of it, or, you know, that whole generation of cycling. And I had a personal curiosity as to what exactly do these drugs do? Do they make you Superman? Would I have been able to be a top-level pro had I chosen to break the rules and take these substances? And so there was that part of curiosity in my journey also, which was essentially confronting my own mortality and confronting my own limitations physically and wondering if I could exceed what I was capable of.
So the idea, you're trying to figure out how this system works. At least that's where the film starts. And so part of it is about what doping could do for you. And I wanted to ask you about that. What is it you really wanted to understand or know? And is part of it, I guess you sort of said that, part of it was, could I make it with the big guys?
Yeah, I mean, look, I knew from the moment that I set out on this. I mean, look, I'm an amateur. I wasn't licensed. I wasn't going into races that were sanctioned that I was cheating. And at the time that I started the movie, or really started filming, I think I was about to turn 40. You know, there was no delusion in my mind that I was going to become a professional cyclist or or that this was going to be anything more than a film and an experiment and a documented experiment. But what I thought would be incredibly interesting in that journey is that every cyclist that I've ridden with through the years, every athlete that I know, and I think every armchair quarterback always has this curiosity in the back of their mind of what do these drugs do? And would have they been that much better? Or are they dangerous? And that was at least partially driving my desire to start making this film. And the other driving element to me was that anybody that I spoke to, they had all believed that Armstrong had been caught. Mm-hmm. And in that belief, at least to me, that meant that they believed that the anti-doping system in sport was effective. And to me, I'm going, wait, He didn't get caught, and the system is clearly incapable of catching cheaters, because if it was, how could the most tested athlete on planet Earth have been able to have cheated his entire career and not gotten caught?
Yeah.
And to me, that was an incredibly interesting question to explore from a scientific level and from a personal pursuit, and to show the world essentially, hey, this is the reality of this system in football, in basketball, in baseball, in Olympic sport, and, you know, take cycling out of it. And what do we as a society want to do or not want to do, knowing firsthand and after watching this film that essentially the system that is designed to catch cheaters doesn't work, and essentially is leaving athletes with a moral and ethical choice rather than a scientific choice as to whether or not they take something to try to enhance their performance, because the battleground and the playing field is so intense to win.
The idea that you have is you're going to go and participate in this incredibly grueling amateur race in France, and you're going to have some people help you create, help you dope, basically. And it was interesting to hear you talk with some of these cyclists, and I imagine you talked to a lot who hated the idea. But it's interesting that they hated the idea, but you've talked about how a lot of these clean athletes who couldn't stand it, and it comes through in the film, you've talked about how they kind of stand on this soapbox but pretend that this is not happening system-wide when it is.
And that, to me, was startling. And what I realized is, so as I start deciding that I'm going to do this, I confide to a few friends of mine that are pros or former pros, and they had this, like, you know, terrible reaction to it. Like, oh my God, you can't do that. What are you thinking? You can't dope. That's not ethical. And I would say to these people, I'd say, well, look, I'm not going into professional races to cheat somebody out of a prize or money or a contract. I'm an amateur, but what I really am is I'm a filmmaker, and I'm going on an investigative journalistic mission to explore whether or not this system works. And wouldn't you, as a professional athlete, like to know if the system that you're subscribing to, if the system that's supposed to be protecting you from cheaters is working? Isn't that of a curiosity to you? And I found repeatedly that the answer was no, which I found so strange, meaning that as an athlete, you would subscribe to this whereabouts program. You would never, ever dope yourself. And you would simply believe that the system worked, even though there is a staggering amount of evidence to the contrary, and then not be curious to find out if indeed the system is working for you, because that's your livelihood.
Yeah.
And even though I got that blowback, to me, I felt like there was a bigger story to tell, and that the story was not about cycling. It was about global sports and whether or not this anti-doping system, which is being presented by the Olympics and all these organizations as working and highly effective, work. And one amazing statistic I came across was how the National Football League, and I'm a little rusty on my facts at the moment, but a couple years ago, they finally get their HGH testing in place. And to this day, there still hasn't been a single positive for HGH in the NFL.
Yeah.
And you're going, wait, how is this possible?
Yeah.
And then I would go talk to the scientists, and this is before I even started filming. And the scientists in the labs would tell me, well, you can actually detect HGH. The problem is that the NFL has intentionally chosen to use the test for HGH where the detection window is only about 8 to 10 hours. And this was negotiated between the Players League and the Owners League. So meaning here they are intentionally, you know, putting forward a system knowing that there's loopholes around it because it's in the best interest of the players and the owners to allow the system to be as is.
It's almost like it goes beyond just athletes, and it in some ways I think a lot about the spectators. Like, we don't like cheaters on one hand, but then on the other hand, we revere great athletes. I mean, you hate what Lance Armstrong did, but you think he's an amazing athlete, and there's a weird paradox there.
That's right. I mean, in my mind, and I think a lot of people's mind, here's a guy, Lance, who is undisputably a spectacular athlete. I mean, a genetic freak of nature. But not only that, he was so single-minded in his pursuit of excellence, of perfection, of victory. I mean, he was a gladiator. I mean, he was win at all costs, much like the Russians, in, as we discover in Icarus. And there's something to be kind of revered about that, someone that is so single-minded in their pursuit of perfection. Because, you know, the way that I looked at Armstrong was, it's not just the dope. I mean, he had revolutionized time trialing. He had revolutionized equipment. He was deep into the scientific weeds of a faster bike and helmets and aero equipment and time trial positions, nutrition, pedaling techniques. He was looking at cycling as a science problem and how to essentially perfect everything about himself to be a, you know, to be the perfect cyclist. And in so doing, I mean, he won 7 Tour de France's, which is startling in and of itself, that he didn't crash, that he was so mathematical and perfect in his execution that somebody was able to do that. So there's clearly a tremendous amount of respect for that. And then on the flip side of it, you know, he's destroying everyone in his path. And then we learn that he's been doping his entire career. But we also learned that everybody else of his generation had been doping too.
Yeah.
It's complicated. It's not. I don't think it's black and white.
It's Brian Fogel. He directed, co-wrote, and co-produced the film Icarus, which we're screening on Wednesday night at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center. It's part of our Through the Lens series, our partnership with the Utah Film Center. Fogel is going to join us for a Q&A after the film. You should know, seating is limited, so you'll need to get there early. We have more details about that on our website, radiowest.org. We'll take a break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we continue our documentary series with the filmmaker Brian Fogel. We're talking about his film Icarus, which premiered at Sundance this year. As soon as Fogel met Grigory Rodchenkov, his film turned into a thrilling expose about international sports doping. Rodchenkov is a brilliant, quirky Russian chemist who quotes Orwell, loves dogs, happened to be in charge of drug testing for all Russian athletes. The film is called Icarus. We're screening it on Wednesday. We'll give you more details about that a little bit later in the program. There's a man named Don Catlin who at first agrees in the film to help you do this doping thing. He's interested in trying to help you, but then he gets cold feet, kind of backs out, and introduces you to the main character in the film, really, this fellow named Grigory Rodchenkov. And I wanted to ask you, he's an old friend of Catlin, and you talk and you say in the film that, of course, this sets off the series of events. And I want to ask about your relationship with him. We'll dig into who he is and his story as we go. But it's so interesting because at first it seems like a kind of funny diversion. But then as the film goes along, something really happens in this relationship. It deepens. And the sense of trust and confidence and affection, it seems to me, becomes really an important part of the film. Would you talk about this?
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring this up because editorially, myself and my creative team really saw the film as a bromance.
Yeah.
And within this bromance, there is a global thriller that is that uncovers and exposes the single biggest scandal in sport history. But all of the revelations of the film and ultimately the exposing of this scandal lie in this bromance between Gregory and I, mm-hmm. which was our relationship. And what happens in the film is I get connected to Gregory, and Gregory and I start down this path. And there's a scene that is not in the film before we see him on Skype. And what had happened is I've been introduced to Gregory right during the time that Sochi Olympics were going on. So this is like February, March 2014. And we start engaging in a series of emails, and he doesn't know that I'm looking to dope. I just told him that I'm an American filmmaker looking to make a film exploring the anti-doping system in sport. And over a couple phone calls and emails and back and forth, he invites me to come meet him in Oregon in July of 2014, where he's lecturing at this symposium. And this is actually how he has his visa, which comes in very handy later when he needs to escape from Moscow under the threat of death. And so I go and meet him in July of 2014 in Oregon, and we just strike up a friendship. He was an athlete. I'm an athlete. We just immediately got along. And in these 2 days there, I start asking him these questions. And the question, the main question, was I asked him, I said, Gregory, do you believe that an Olympic medal can be won without the use of performance-enhancing drugs? And he looks at me and he goes, I try to believe, I should believe, I want to believe, but I don't believe that an Olympic medal can be won without performance-enhancing drugs. And then he takes a pause and he goes, I don't know, maybe I'm a bad man. And this was this statement here before I had ever taken anything in my body as I'm just starting out on this journey. And this is coming from the head of Russia's anti-doping laboratory, the guy who was in charge of all the testing. You know, it was, and I didn't quite know what to make of it at that time, but it certainly led me to believe that there was something more there. And that began just kind of this friendship, and the friendship just developed and blossomed. And he went from being my advisor, and we come out of Oregon, and he agrees that he's going to help me dope, even though he shouldn't have been technically. But he wanted to help me because we liked each other. Yeah. And he felt that it would be an interesting experiment, and also that because I was an amateur, that he wasn't cheating. You know, he wasn't helping a pro. And I put all of my trust into him. And so I go from being the subject in the movie, and he's my advisor, but my success is hinging on his help and support.
Yeah.
And never once was there a dollar of money exchanged, anything. This was just a friendship. And he came to Los Angeles, and I went to Moscow, and we were back and forth on hundreds of Skype calls and phone calls and emails. And then when everything pivoted and he needed my help, it was a very easy decision for me to make, because this was a guy who had helped me unconditionally and was an unconditional friend to me. And it was that friendship that made it so easy for me to then risk my own safety to help him. And ultimately, it was the friendship that allowed this film to be made and allowed the story to come forward.
There is a moment I want to play from the film. As we come to learn more about Gregory, and we learn just how embedded in sports, and maybe in Russian sports, maybe in all sports, is this idea of doping. And he's telling you this story, and there's a great moment here that people will hear. Now, he mentions a particular drug that he took. But there's a great moment where the conversation sort of pauses as people will hear as you want him to kind of restate this. Anyway, here's a moment from the film.
I was almost a professional in running 1,500 meters and 5 kilometers in Moscow University. My mother always pushed me to swim, to ski. I realized that some people are using something. Last year he was nobody. Next year he has a muscles. And of course, I also started to use the best of the best, stanozolol. And all injections were done by my mother. And of course, it was 50 milligrams, the simple thing.
Wait, wait. Your mother injected you?
Yes, of course.
It's kind of funny at first, but then you realize, wow, what do you make of that? Because this gives you a sense of how, like I said, embedded in a system, in a culture, this is.
That's right. And I think, you know, this is an interesting discussion between the American or Western European perspective of how things in the world should be versus the reality. Mm-hmm. And so even in the discussion of doping and sport, right, I think the American or Western European perspective is, you know, oh, my God, how could you do that? Those are the rules, and the rules are not meant to be broken. But in Gregory's world and in the Russian society, that was just how it was, and it always was. Here he is being administered steroids by his mother in the 1970s. And this is what everybody did. It wasn't a choice of whether you did it or not. And if you didn't do it, you weren't going to be on the national team. And if you did, and if you got good enough, then you would be on the national team, and the Russian government would help support your steroid regimen so that you could hopefully be a champion. And this never changed. So this proceeded all the way through the 80s. And you had to remember, here's Russia in communism, and they're battling against America. And there's this, you know, Russian-U.S. rivalry, and Russia is trying to assert itself as a global superpower. And what do they do to that extent to show that they're powerful? It's their sports program. And just as George Orwell says that sports is war without the weapons, that is clearly how Russia and the ministry, where all of sport is contained, unlike the United States, where it's privatized. Mm-hmm. In Russia, if you're a Russian athlete, you are an employee of the government. And Russia has used their sport program to assert its power geopolitically, and the Olympics being this massive, you know, event that all of planet Earth watches is essentially the platform to which Russia can show itself as a strong country. And how do they show themselves as being strong? Through their athletes, and their athletes winning medals. And so I think when you look at it from this perspective and the perspective to which Gregory came from, which was a system that was always doing this, And when communism ended, then it was just the restart of how do we now show ourselves to be strong as a socialist society, as a new economic power post-communism. So in that way, the Cold War never ended, and the system never ended, and the mindset was always everybody else is doing it, and so Russia will do it too, and we need to be the best. And this is how we show that Russia is the best. And so I think when you step inside that mentality, it's easier to start understanding Gregory as not so much a guy who was doing bad things, but a guy who was part of a larger program. And that program was simply how it was done and how it was always done.
It's interesting if you think about the effect on just world events today of something like doping or cheating in the Olympics. You point out in the film, and this is remarkable, that Vladimir Putin's approval rating had been steadily headed downward. It was starting to really tank. And as soon as the Russians had so much success in Sochi, it starts going up. And you say immediately after, he has the political capital now to start the war with Ukraine, and now his approval ratings are up there. Just the effect of that, just on the world, is pretty remarkable.
It is, because when you look behind the mask of the Olympic Games, so you have these Olympic Games and the credo, which the Olympic organizations themselves do not uphold despite the propaganda that they present to the world, is play fair, be true, respect the rules. But the Olympic ideal is that the entire world is coming together on planet Earth in peace and harmony and fair play and shaking hands and goodwill. But behind that is each one of these countries, especially developing countries, looking at those Olympic Games as a way to show themselves as a developed nation. So in regards to Russia and Sochi, here you have Russia spending $50 billion on those Sochi Games. This is more than anybody had ever spent in the history of the Olympics to host a Games. They turned a basically tropical kind of area of Sochi, which really doesn't even have snow naturally, into a ski resort out of nowhere. I mean, this was not an area where people were skiing, but they chose that this was going to be the town to host the Olympics, and they spend $50 billion to do so. And this is supporting Russian infrastructure and Russian business and construction and giving a gazillion jobs. And part of that, of course, is that you can't then go spend $50 billion to host the Olympics and lose.
Yeah.
So part of that whole mandate is we're going to do this, but we're also going to win at all costs. And in so doing, what Putin was able to do was he was able to unify Russia through sport and through the Olympics, because those Sochi Games was a massive source of national pride for that country to be able to pull off those games, to be able to build the facilities to do that, and then to win. And in so doing, Putin's approval rating shot through the roof, and he used that national pride to then go and invade Ukraine, much like Hitler in the 1936 Olympics. Or much like China in the 2008 Beijing Olympics, where you look at those Beijing Olympics, and behind the scenes, this was China's coming out party to the world to show the world that they were a first world power and that they could build and that their athletes were of world caliber also. And China dominated those Beijing Olympics, much like the Russians topped the medal count at Sochi.
Yeah.
So you look at what's involved. It's not just the gold medal, it's geopolitics. And to a country like Russia, or a developing country, winning in sports is almost the equivalent of winning in war, and it's advancing the agenda at home. And in the case of Putin, it gave him essentially the ability to go into Ukraine and have the support of the Russian people behind that.
It's Brian Fogel. He directed, co-wrote, and co-produced the film Icarus. We're going to be screening it Wednesday night at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center. Fogel will be there for a Q&A after the film. You will need to get there early, probably, because seating is limited. You can get details about it on our website, radiowest.org. We'll take another break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Back now to our conversation with the filmmaker Brian Fogel. We're talking about his film Icarus. The film really starts to turn, of course, with the news of this German documentary film about Russian doping. This is where the story really starts to turn. It turns away from your idea of trying to dope and learn what you could learn about doping in this race, and it shifts to Gregory. And I want to play this moment in the film where the story breaks. Eventually, Gregory resigns from his role, and things start to unravel. And there's this moment, and there's a lot of these particular moments, but this seems really crucial, where you're talking to him, Skyping with him in some cases, on the phone with him in some cases, and you're talking to him now at this particular moment, and you get a sense of this is really serious. Here's another moment from the film Icarus.
There are 50 correspondents behind my band, but I am here. And I am not supposed to talk. Still quiet. You are like a man. Only you, knowing me.
Holy shit.
He's saying, Brian, stay quiet, only you. I mean, it's just, it's hard to understand what Gregory's saying, especially with that line. But this was really intense here, and it raises the question. You ask him if he's in danger, and he is. And he is now. Would you put those stakes in perspective for us?
So that scene was... this is now November 2015, and this original German documentary starts this investigation into Russia's state-sponsored doping program, but it's limited to track and field only, not all sports, just track and field. And this investigation goes on for a year, and this is actually the same period of time that I'm doping and working with Gregory, and Gregory is advising me how to dope. And so while this investigation is going on with Gregory, I'm working with him and he's teaching me how to dope. And this investigation breaks, and because of this 335-page report, Gregory is forced to resign as the director of the WADA lab in Moscow, the World Anti-Doping Agency lab. And the lab is shut down, and Russia is provisionally suspended from world track and field. And this is a crisis in Russia. And more importantly, Putin gets on state television and denies everything that is in this 335-page report that was put together with the help of Interpol and forensic examiners and all. I mean, this was a big investigation.
Yeah.
And Putin denies that there is any state-sponsored program in Russia. He denies that any of this has happened. But more importantly, he says that if anything has happened, it is the individuals to blame. And it will be those individuals that are held accountable, and punishment will be absolute.
Yeah.
That was essentially Gregory's death sentence.
Yeah.
And in a period of about 24 hours after this statement, Gregory is hearing from other friends of his in the FSB, the KGB. And Gregory had FSB clearance, mm-hmm, because he was part of this secret state-sponsored doping program, and he was essentially the mastermind. He was the head of it, and he's hearing from other associates within the FSB that Russia has planned his suicide, and he needs to get out. And we're Skyping, and he tells me that he needs to escape, and that he thinks he's going to be killed, and that he is the linchpin to the ability of Russia to be in the Olympic Games, and that the information that he has is explosive. And I buy him a plane ticket and get him to Los Angeles within days. And that's where the story pivots. And I learned that Gregory is not only involved in this program, that he has essentially been the mastermind of this program,
yeah,
and that this program was across all sports, pretty much all Russian athletes, and that this program had been in place for essentially the last 40 years, and that what he had been doing and what Russia had done essentially changed Olympic history, because it called into question every single medal that was ever won by any Russian athlete, where they beat another athlete, and now knowing that the likelihood was that those athletes had doped, and the knowledge of that and what Gregory had done even became more in depth with his involvement of Sochi. But that moment that you just listened to in that clip was truly a life and death moment for Gregory, as he knew that Russia was going to throw him under the bus to protect the truth of what they had done from coming out.
There's a moment in the film when you are meeting with investigators of the World Anti-Doping Agency, members of the IOC's Athletes Commission. And you're disclosing, you're laying, Gregory couldn't meet, so you're there to talk with them. And you're disclosing all of the evidence and information that Gregory had collected. He had a hard drive and other information that he had somehow managed to bring with him. And I want to play this moment and then have you talk about what listeners won't be able to gather, and that is the reaction of some of those athletes.
Vancouver was really the impetus for the urine swapping operation. They only won a handful of medals, and to see to it that that didn't happen again at Sochi.
We find that in terms of time sensitive, yes. London is more sensitive in the sense that these athletes are going to the next Rio Games, not the winter.
This is Sochi, this is London, this is Beijing. This goes all the way back to 1968. There never was anti-doping in Russia, period, ever.
Across all summer sports?
Every sport.
Explain how they're reacting, because it's kind of one of the most powerful moments in the film, the way these athletes react to this news.
You know, it was, I liken it to these athletes. It was Claudia Bakel and Becky Scott. Claudia was the head of the IOC Athletes Commission, essentially representing all Olympic athletes. Becky Scott is the head of the WADA Athletes Commission, essentially representing all athletes for the World Anti-Doping Agency that subscribed to WADA protocols. And it was essentially them learning that there was that Santa Claus, the Easter Bunny, and the Tooth Fairy do not exist all at the same time. It was a very difficult moment, because what I was presenting in that room was the evidence of a scandal that I think is hard to fathom, because it was so big and so vast and such a massive conspiracy against every clean athlete on planet Earth, that Russia had been going into every one of these Olympic Games and international competitions cheating.
Yeah.
And in so doing, athletes like Claudia Bakel and Becky Scott and any other clean athlete who had went into these games under the belief that the system was going to protect them, the Olympics were going to protect them, the anti-doping agency was going to protect them, and believed in the integrity of sport, was learning that a country, not an individual, not a Lance Armstrong, but a country was essentially supporting and behind the doping of all of their athletes to go and cheat and take medals from athletes all across the world through its own doping program to assert its own power geopolitically. And I mean, if I was Claudia Bakel, or if I had been an Olympic athlete who might have had a medal taken from me, I think that would be a very hard moment. And I think there's probably tens of thousands of Olympic athletes and former Olympic athletes around the world right now sitting there and going, what if, what if, what if? Because they went into those games believing in the integrity of the Olympics, and then are finding that not only was a country supporting this kind of program, but that the Olympic Games themselves really had no interest in the protection of clean athletes, and that it was purely it's purely business.
There are two moments, really interesting moments, I wanted to ask you about in the film, maybe even more, because Gregory has to make this choice. He has to decide whether he's going to go public with this information, essentially talk to the New York Times, and reveal all of this. And he knows the stakes. He understands. I mean, he understands how Russia works, and he understands this. He leaves his wife and his children behind. He's in the United States. There's one moment where you ask him, Gregory, is it in your interest to break the story? Like, what you're saying is, are you sure you want to disclose this? And he's pretty matter-of-fact about it. But then later his wife asks, as they're Skyping, in this really kind of poignant moment, she says, what do you want to come of all of this? Which is a pretty good question. And they're both the same question. Like, what are you doing? Why do you want to do this? What do you think the answer is?
I think the answer is that, you know, Gregory, as you come to see in the film, is a very complicated character, because he's completely lovable. You just fall in love with this guy. And at the same time, he had been involved in a huge conspiracy that he was, in many ways, the main guy, at least on the ground with. But I think with that became a huge burden to him. And there's so much ground that we're not able to cover in the film as to why he wanted to bring this story forward. But the long story short is he felt responsible for a way about the deaths and the war that Putin launched in Ukraine. He felt guilt over having to report athletes that were under the state-sponsored program as doping, even though they believed they were being protected, but they had to be sacrificed in order for the system to appear that it worked. He felt guilt that he had literally assisted in swapping out dirty urine for clean urine at Sochi, and the length to which this system had went to. And he saw that, and you see in the film, and he saw that how Russia was able to push him under the bus, as they did when he was doing his job prior to the London Games, but had crossed paths with the wrong coach and suddenly was under investigation, even though he was doing what he was supposed to be doing for the state. And so he had a lot of reasons. And I think the biggest one was that he needed to see to it that the world knew that this happened, that this story was so much bigger than him. And I think he said, you know, if this is the end of my life, then so be it. But he felt a tremendous burden that he needed to bring this story forward to the world, because he could have come to the United States and essentially, you know, not done that. Yeah. And he chose to not only go forward with this, but essentially the decision that he might never see his family again. You know, I don't know if you've read his op-ed in the New York Times from last week, but he was able to do an op-ed in the New York Times where he went into detail about the continued, essentially, aggression against him by Russia, his family, and the denial of Russia that this system, even to this day, with all the evidence, existed, and essentially the denial by the Olympic organization itself of really wanting to take any action against a fraud of this level, which is mind-blowing. And he says in his op-ed that he's concerned that these tremendous risks that he has taken to himself and his family will go unacknowledged, and that Russia will remain unpunished. And that's upsetting. And in response to that New York Times op-ed, Russia has put forward a global warrant for his arrest to bring him back to Russia, where he will certainly meet his death or sit in a jail cell for his life. They've also seized all of his assets. They're in the process of taking whatever assets his children and wife have, and are looking to present criminal charges against his family, I think, in the idea that it would bring him back to Russia. So it's incredibly upsetting that this is the reality of a world that we're living in.
And in the meantime, the entire Russian Sports Federation is going to compete in the 2018 Olympics in South Korea. Russia's hosting the World Cup. I mean, how do you feel about that?
Well, that's where it stands now.
Yeah.
And what you see is, and why we latched on into the film with the doublethink, with the George Orwell 1984 theme, which is that essentially we're living in a world of fake news. We're living in a world of saying one thing and doing the other. And what we're seeing in Icarus and in the story of this film and in Gregory's bravery to bring this story forward is that ultimately big business and geopolitics are going to win over truth.
It's Brian Fogel. His documentary film is called Icarus. And you can see it for free on Wednesday evening at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center in downtown Salt Lake City. This, of course, is part of our Through the Lens series, our partnership with the Utah Film Center. Brian Fogel is going to join us there for a Q&A after the film. We should just point out, seating is limited, so you may want to plan on arriving early. You can get details about it on our website, radiowest.org. Radio West is a production of KUER News. We have technical direction from Tim Slover, thanks to Anthony Scoma. The program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.